Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Caught Offside with Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney.
Oh, yes. Caught Offside just outside of New York City. I'm from an apartment in Brooklyn, New York. Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney. What's up, brother?
I'm okay. I'm all right. It's been an interesting 24 hours, Andrew. There's no need to chuckle. Oh, God. Look, I'm fine. In the broader scheme of things, I'm fine. Just go on the internet and see some of the horrors we're seeing around the world.
Oh, my God. The fact that you even need to say that. Would you relax with the drama?
But that's the thing. You see, so like there is an awful lot of, and I'm sure I'm prone to it myself, emoting going on. Online, you know, reevaluations of legacies, reasons why a bald Dutchman is coming in at exactly the right time with exactly the right skill set, and why this thing is, you know, we overachieved. We should be just happy where we are. I am, of course, referring to the fallout from the Derby yesterday, the Merseyside Derby. Yeah, I don't know what to say.
Well, you better find it, all right? Because there's a lot of people tuning in that want to hear your thoughts. We'll get to that one. We'll get to that game in a few moments. A lot has happened with regards to the title race over the last couple of days here. We're going to talk all about it.
Has a lot happened?
Yeah. Yes.
Yes. I think a lot has happened to one club.
I mean, it's debatable, but it's distinctly possible that what was a three-team title race 2 days ago is a two-team race now. I consider happening.
Yeah, I think it's exactly that.
So we'll discuss whether or not that is in fact the case. Like you said, a bald Dutchman potentially could be the next Liverpool manager. It looks like we're inching closer and closer
towards
that.
We need to get more bald Dutchmen into this league.
Well, I mean, I think there might be a one-in, one-out policy. So we'll talk a little bit more about that. And then I was going to say Liverpool fans are hoping for a Klopp reversal. Maybe, I mean, you're suggesting maybe that's not true with some of this legacy relitigation, but one manager has had a reversal, one that we kind of saw coming a little bit.
The sage of Westchester.
We'll talk Oracle. About who that was and why that happened. Some stuff closer to home here in the U.S., some Dest stuff, some Tim Weah stuff, some Columbus Crew stuff. There's a lot. This is a fun one. Well,
A lively one. The one thing I will say about yesterday was maybe it's because I'm a sicko. Maybe there's something wrong with me. But I was looking forward to talking to you and to everybody about the game yesterday and about what happened. Even though what happened is not what I wanted to happen, I was still looking forward to do the pod. And so that's a good thing. Second good thing is, so like I didn't get a chance to do a long walk yet. I've kind of been parceling it out because everyone knows about long, sad walks whenever Liverpool lose, which I think I first started those in lockdown, in COVID times when football came back, when walking was all we could do. And instead, last night I went and I played seven-a-side football, and I hadn't played in a while. I played in goal because I think my left knee is in trouble, major trouble, and I had a great game. And I'm not boasting. The opposition said so. And I just thought about that moment. And, you know, look, they beat us 4-1. So, you know.
Good Lord.
Yeah. Imagine being a goalkeeper and you can say you had a great game and you lost 4-1. It's kind of an indicator of the pressure I was under. I honestly wonder if I actually did play that well. Or if it was Pickford at Sunderland syndrome, where he faced so many shots that he just looked, wow, that guy can do everything. He's doing everything. What a keeper. But afterwards, just to get to the point of this, your worst nightmare happened. There was just a procession of opposition players. You know, you're shaking hands after the game. A procession just saying, man, yeah, you were great. Oh my God. And Americans are so polite because they're, not all Americans, actually. I don't want to tar everyone with this politeness brush, but they're much more likely to tell someone they don't know way to go than Europeans are. And yeah, you would have hated it. Oh, and that's all I could think of. You would have absolutely despised that moment.
I mean, I don't root against you. I just... Sometimes I think you need to be kept in check.
That's probably true.
That's
probably
all.
True. That's what my mother used to think.
Let's see. We'll talk about Liverpool in one sec. Just want to remind everybody the Design a Shirt program is entering its final days here. It's been spectacular. Mm. One of the great successes in the history of this program, I would say. I don't even know what to do with some of the ideas we've gotten. They're that good.
It's the greatest success, a big success, people are saying.
Many people are saying the Design a Shirt program. I thought of it, by the way. So it's been so good. We'll hopefully have a decision sometime next week on what shirt we're going to go with. It's going to be hard to decide, but we're in the final days here. So if you have an idea, you've been, should I submit it or not? Just submit it. There's no harm can come from it. So just submit it. And, who knows, it could wind up on a Caught Offside t-shirt sometime.
Trust your touch, your feel.
Let's do it now, JJ, the Premier League title race. It has been by far the most compelling title race among Europe's top leagues. It had been a three-team race. I don't know that it still is. Let's discuss. Liverpool, they lose at Everton, at Goodison. The first time, incredibly, that Liverpool have lost at Goodison since 2010? Is that possible? Good Lord.
Mikel Arteta was playing the last time.
Oh, my goodness.
Playing for Everton.
Yeah, and it's not to say Liverpool didn't have their chances. I think they did win the XG battle by a decent margin, but it's also not to say that Everton didn't deserve it.
No, it's that mix of basically a team created good chances, but the other team in their intensity and their application more than deserved the win. And I think that's how this game played out. It was just apparent from so early on that things weren't right. You know, Everton were, as you'd expect, Sean Dyche team against the Klopp team. We've seen that dynamic before, and a derby game. And they just got into Liverpool from the get-go, from the start. And Liverpool were just rattled. Simple as that. And more so than rattled, they were just a step off, Andrew. You just can't. Like Klopp went on after the game and said, our counter press was terrible. You know, he was very frank, very honest, very forlorn, very tired, the whole thing. But he was right. Like just this palsy that's been around for, I say, 5 or 6 weeks now, just continues. And it was a really bad time. Everton scored a try. The ball was bundled over the line. Dominic Calvert-Lewin, he's gonna try and get whatever he could, but it went to Jared Branthwaite off a deflection underneath Alisson and squirmed over the line. And apart from the closing, 10-15 minutes of the first half, the whole of the second half, I didn't know how we were going to score a goal. That's the facts of it. And so I never felt, after they went 1-0 up, I felt as if that's it. Like I really, and obviously once Dominic Calvert-Lewin nodded home from a corner kick that Klopp said, well, we knew all about it. Did ya? You know, he was saying we knew all about it and still terrible defending.
What, Everton's ability on set pieces?
Yeah, no, but that specific corner routine.
That ball was in the air for a long time.
Yeah, whipped over. Yeah, it really, really was to the far post. It was, it was like a lot of things that Everton did. It was, you know, old school and industrial. And Liverpool weren't capable. They weren't at it. I don't know what Trent Alexander-Arnold was doing.
There's not a player in this sport that makes my head hurt the way he does, because a few days ago, he was utterly spectacular. He's knocking in free kicks. He's setting up goals. He's unbelievable. And then a few days later, you're like, can we play this guy? Like, is he too much of a liability defensively that he's worth what he brings in? He just makes you, he drives you crazy. I don't know. Maybe I'm doing to him what some of your friends have done to Salah, where like there's a clear, brilliant player there and people just like have a hard time seeing it because of other weird reasons. Maybe I'm doing that with Trent. I know I see the brilliant qualities in him, but my God, I see stuff. Can he maybe, whoever this next manager is going to be, Arne Slot, whoever, is it? We've talked about it before, but like, does he have to be a defender? Can he be moved up? I mean, Gareth Bale moved up the field a couple different times, all the way up into striker. Like,
I mean, the emergence of Bradley would suggest that's an option. Obviously, Bradley injured, but I mean, that's something.
Now, look, on a corner kick, everyone is kind of asked to defend. So, he'd be in that position potentially anyway. But he's just, for a guy who plays a defensive position, and I know the position has changed, but still, you are one of the defenders on this team. Like, my God, does he have any defensive instincts?
No. It was a mess. It wasn't just him involved. It was just compete, be physical. It can't be that easy of a header. Alisson is unsighted as well by what's in front of him. Oh, yeah. It was... I was in the Munro for it. Life just sucked out of the place. Drained. And there was a guy in the bar.
Was your really positive friend there? Did you punch him in the face?
Adam was there. So positive. It's often, especially when things are going well, it's great to have a guy around like that. But there was another new player entered the fray on Friday. He did something unforgivable. I have. So the game is like, people are quiet with 10 minutes to go because the inevitable is staring them in the face. The abyss is right there. Mm-hmm. And they're staring into it. And so right at the end of the game, as is tradition, you'll never walk alone is played. It's always played at the bar before the game, after the game. You're not compelled to sing it. You're allowed wallow in your misery. You're allowed take a moment. And this guy, not Adam, some other guy, come on, man. Come on, guys, sing it. Let's sing it. And I'm like, oh, come on. And I'm beside my friend Justin, and he's looking at me, and I'm looking at him. And he goes, can we not just have a minute?
Yeah.
And he says it to me. And the guy's like, we're not giving up. We're not giving up. And he's like, come on, everybody. And like some people half-heartedly get into it, but like, you don't have to. And then like there's other people who I felt sang it because they felt it was some kind of like purity test that this guy would like just, he's a witch. Point at them if they don't start singing, you know?
It is something you do see in this sport. Like I've seen when teams get relegated, their fans stay behind and they voice their support.
And that's lovely. That's different though. That wasn't this. Okay. This was just limp failure. And like it wasn't some gallant defeat, you know? It wasn't like facing the odds and almost overcoming them. It was nothing of the sort. It was a no-show in a derby, and we got bet. So just, shh, There's no need for this.
Yeah.
And he kept doing it. In fairness to the guy, he was like, you know, come on, come on. We always sing this song, you know? And that level of unbridled enthusiasm.
I have a hard time. When I'm in the mood that you were in,
oh,
I have a hard time being around that. I don't want any part of it.
No. And again, like I said, the moment, like after Madrid, after we were beaten in the Champions League final, like nobody stood around singing. There was like a grim resignation. But did we sing later on? We sure did. Like we got drunk and we sang. And same in, maybe not in Paris. Paris was a altogether different vibe. But yeah, you know, but just not give people room. You know, someone said to me on Twitter, don't wallow too long. No, no, no. You must wallow. Wallowing is good. As long as you eventually get out of the wallow, pull yourself out of the wallow, get the wallow off, dry yourself off and get on with life. But like you should wallow. Anyway.
Nothing wrong with it. Absolutely nothing wrong with it. Couple questions pertaining to Liverpool, and then we should touch on Everton as well. But Liverpool, I think, are probably the bigger story here. The title race. Is it a three-team race anymore?
That's done.
Okay.
It's done. There's a systems failure going on now where I'm not sure that Liverpool won't drop more points before the end of the season. That's genuinely how I feel. I say systems failure. That's incorrect. The attack has fallen apart. And, you know, you're looking at the fixtures away to West Ham. You never know what you're going to get with West Ham, really. Home to Tottenham, Aston Villa away. Like, with the way they're playing, Andrew, where are the guarantees? There just aren't any. And they are in a slump. There's no question. And I'll deal with the attack in a second, but it's not just that. Like, they're a step off. The tiredness and jadedness of the manager is somehow dripped down to the players. And they're spent. Maybe it's not just that they're spent. Although you can definitely see that in their play. Maybe it's that they're not that good. You know, maybe they're not where we thought they were.
Oh my.
Maybe they're not as far on as we thought they were. Maybe the midfield rebuild is not quite what we thought it was. Maybe it's a case that if a team consistently goes behind all the time, that's not like really title winning form. And eventually you get caught out. Maybe what I said, I mean, I should be sitting here vindicated about everything I've said about Darwin Nunez. Jamie Carragher on the Sky broadcast is pretty much done with him as a Liverpool attacker and a top striker. But maybe I should be sitting here drinking a cup of vindication. But I mean, who wants to do that? It's not just him. No, but hang on, Andrew. That chance where he's through on Pickford, in the first half. You have to slot that. He does what he usually does, and he blasts it straight at him.
I think because Nunez, because he cost what he cost, I think that, and I understand it, I think that there is more of a target on him, but I do feel like Luis Diaz has a lot of similar moments to Darwin Nunez. I think that their missed chances are not all that dissimilar from one another.
I think Diaz is not being as smooth. He's still a better finisher. He's still technically miles ahead of Nunez. I mean, it's not even close. Darwin Nunez is not. He's just not. You can't win a championship with this guy at centre forward. Can't do it. Salah is completely off the boil. The attack's in trouble. But Jamie Carragher addressed this question of maybe Liverpool have been overachieving this season.
Man City are on a different level to Liverpool this season. I think Arsenal have just got the edge on Liverpool as well. And I actually think this season, I think probably in the last, say, 6 to 8 weeks when you're talking about the top three going for the title, I think from a Liverpool point of view, it's almost been a hope rather than a belief. I don't feel, certainly this season, from sort of August to now, I've been watching a title-winning team. And in some ways, I think they've actually overachieved this team. Mm-hmm. Because I don't actually think they're that good. And I don't mean it as a criticism. I think they've done brilliantly well. But because it's Klopp's last season, it almost feels like you've got to do this at the end. But if Klopp was staying for like another 2 or 3 years, this would be seen as a great building block to then go on.
I kind of agree with them a little bit. So after the game last night, I was out with a friend of mine who went to see Liverpool play Brighton. And, you know, Liverpool win that game. But he said, like, they didn't really play that well. You know, there was Brighton went ahead, typical. I look at back at a lot of the games where Liverpool, won games. I think of, remember Klopp, Luton at home. Remember the big deal he made out of that? You know, it was like this group's Barcelona. Maybe this has been staring us in the face for a while. You know, the cup result, the cup performance against United was chilling. Then the league result was really what set this in motion. This end of season collapse in motion. Like if you can't take your chances, you know, in the manner that Liverpool were passing up chances, that's such a worry. It's such a worry. And we've talked about how we worry, you know, we fretting over Arsenal, maybe not having that out-and-out goal scorer, but like Liverpool's don't have it either. Gakpo was out last night because his wife's pregnant. She was in labour. So, look at the options there. Jota injured. Nunez just not at it. Salah not at it.
Can I ask a quick question with some regards to some of these guys? You know, we spend a lot of time beating up Erik ten Hag for not just, you know, a little bit on United style of play, but we talk about the personnel. You know, I often say he can only do so much. There's not enough good players there. And then your retort, which is not wrong, is, well, he signed a lot of them.
Yeah.
We're kind of doing the same thing with Liverpool right now. Whose signings are these?
Well, that's the thing. And Nunes is a Klopp signing. His fingerprints are all over it. He wanted him. He brought him in. And, you know, he was such a departure from everything that had gone before. You know, I'm a broken record. It's like you're replacing this really, really precise machine with something that is erratic, chaotic. You know, we live for so long. Oh, the chaos, he's the agent of chaos. I mean, the chaos he's inflicting is mostly upon his own team. Like when he broke into the box on that chance, I just knew he wasn't going to score. Earlier in the game, he got a ball on the right-hand side in the box in a good position, slips. He's a fine player, but he's just not good enough for Liverpool, not for a team challenging for a title. And I wonder if what Carrick says is correct. But then I don't feel that way because Liverpool have got themselves into position. You know, someone said to me on Twitter, Andrew, oh, if someone said to you last summer, considering the season that Liverpool have had before, that you'd finish comfortably in the Champions League and you'd win, you'd have won a League Cup, you'd have taken that.
And I'm like, you were in the title race until, I mean, look, there are still only 3 points off the top. Most people would say that is still part of a title race. I think we're allowing Liverpool's recent form to kind of poison our thinking. But I'm not sure that I'm entirely, I don't think they're going to win it, but I'm not sure that I'm entirely ready to proclaim this three-team race to be dead.
But the point about, you know, you'd have taken it, and I was like, yeah, but once you get yourself into position, and I felt as if, especially, maybe it was Klopp announcing his that he was leaving. Maybe there was some kind of divine providence and we were all kind of duped a little bit when the glaring things were there. You know, the performance against Fulham at home. It took,
I don't know how they won that game.
Yeah, four worldies to win the game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe.
But that's the stuff where you start to convince yourself, well, maybe they are good. They can do this.
Yeah, and it's not that they're a bad team.
They can score these goals, you know.
It's not that they're a bad team. It's that they're a fundamentally a flawed team in terms of trying to win a championship. And I think that's where we've arrived at. To your point, yeah, there's only 3 points there. But like I said, I don't know how they get out of this slump. I mean, the performance against Fulham was better, but it's still not enough. And one of the key components in that performance is now is now gone. And don't forget, it was 1-1, and it took a Gravenberg goal from outside the box, a curler. You know, it was a great goal, but at the same time, that's what broke the deadlock and got Liverpool ahead. So I don't know. I really don't know, Andrew. Just deflating. The lack of energy. There was a line that just from a Fugazi song that kind of hit me about Klopp. I'm so tired, sheep are counting me. No more struggle, no more energy, no more patience. And you can write that down. It's all too crazy and I'm not sticking around. I've never seen him so down after a game. So utterly down. And I guess I thought in the games after he announced he was leaving, he was too up. You know, he was like, everything was amazing. Look at these players. We're beating Luton at home. You know, it's so tough to manage this kind of an exit. And I wonder if that seeped to the players too. You know, this guy's going.
Yeah, they've been dealt. I mean, I think you're right now, not to say you haven't experienced it before, but in recent times, Liverpool have kind of been immune to how the other side lives. Like, you're kind of going through a patch in form right now that everyone goes through. But because Liverpool are in a title race, because it's the end of Klopp's time with the club, and because this simply doesn't happen to Liverpool, I think there's a magnifying glass on it. I mean, if you look at what's gone on for Liverpool from the day of that Manchester United FA Cup defeat to where we are now, this is not a stretch that Liverpool ordinarily goes through. To lose to United like that, the draw with United, smashed by Atalanta at home in Europe. Yeah, yeah. I mean, stuff like that. It's just, and then losing at Goodison, which is, again, a thing that hasn't happened in 14 years. So teams go through this. Liverpool, it usually doesn't for them. But
no,
this is maybe a sign that they're a little more human than whatever they've been in the past 8 years or so, 9 years or so under this manager. Real quick on the Everton side, I just wanted to ask you this question. They played well. I mean, good to score first, and then Calvert-Lewin, great header from him, really rose up high to get it. Also, too, some of their defending, who was it, Ben Godfrey, who had that amazing clearance in front of goal. It looked like Liverpool were going to kind of walk one into the net. And boy, he did spectacularly well to clear the ball out of there. That's a goal, an enormous goal saved. I think it would have tied it 1-1. If you're an Everton fan, try to put yourself in their shoes. Supporters of that club, what element of this win do they take more joy from? Is it the fact that they pretty much sealed their safety for this season? Or is it the fact that they pretty much ended Liverpool's title challenge?
Well, it very much depends on what kind of an Everton supporter you are. Because if you're a true bitter blue, then you're absolutely delighted that you've stopped Liverpool. Mm-hmm. And then there's another cohort of Everton supporters who, like, obviously don't like Liverpool. They're the rival, but they're much more focused on where Everton are at. So, you know, they're concerned about Everton, period. So it's probably split between the two things. I mean, they've been dreadful. Was that their second win in like 15 games or something?
Well, Everton they've played well lately.
Who've they played well against?
Well, I mean, but who were they? Like they won back to back games.
And, yeah, that's it. Know,
they've won three of their last four.
Okay, yeah, I suppose.
I mean, and they're one. Yeah, they got beat to hell by Chelsea, but you know, they in this month they've got three wins, a draw, and a loss.
No, like I mean, look, winning the derby is huge. They don't do it often. I would say part of them. I'd say mostly it's probably. Again, it depends. I don't know. I don't speak for Everton fans. How would I know? I suppose it depends on the level of bitter that you are, the level of blue nose you are, whether you're completely consumed by what happens to Everton. Yeah, and this is an oasis for them because, you know, it's been another turbulent season. It's like, how much more of this can they go through? And they deserved it on the night. They're They did what they can. I think Sean Dyche and the way he plays football is sustainable? Long term, probably not. But I don't think there's anything about that club at the moment that is sustainable. But staying up is huge. Staying up is, barring some unforeseen. I mean, they could face points deductions next year.
Mm-hmm. It's true.
Yep. So I don't know. But like, it's for now, it's a massive result. Obviously.
Oh my God. Huge.
Yeah. And honestly, they deserved it by the way they defended. They deserved it by the way they, you know, it's easy to make fun and, you know, of how rudimentary they are as a side. But like, yeah, they went and they did it and they spoiled the party.
Yeah.
Spoiled the party? There was no party.
Well, there was one for them.
They ended the party for yeah. Liverpool.
Party of their own. Yeah. So good for Everton. And yeah, we'll see where Liverpool go from here. I mean, this club has had a propensity to rise from the dead before. They're tough to kill. You never know. I don't know. I feel like I'm not... I don't think they're going to win this thing. But
you're always
not
cautious
ready to,
about
I'm
this
I'm not
stuff,
ready to
Andrew.
Count them out. I just see Liverpool, when you think they're out, they score in the 95th minute. Like, this is, I don't know. I'm not ready. I'm not there yet.
It would be, for if they were to come back, and obviously, I mean, another element is like what Klopp said, they need Arsenal and City to have a collapse, have a mini crisis.
I mean, Arsenal are going to Tottenham this weekend. And look, Tottenham are not in the greatest form. They've got some real injury issues, but that's never been an easy game for Arsenal.
You always do this anyway. Like you're.
Oh, you do too.
I'm putting my head on the line. This isn't a wall. It's over. Like
you put up walls to try to protect yourself emotionally.
No, there's no protection here. This is done. It's finished. What are you talking about?
Part of the reason you feel that way is because of what happened in the south coast of England earlier today.
Or didn't happen.
This, Thursday night. Brighton and Manchester City, and it's Man City, they roll to a pretty comfortable 4-0 victory over De Zerbi and company. A couple things from this game that I want to talk about. But first, JJ, I want to bring something up. By all means, animals... Feel free to weigh in with some submissions of your own, and maybe we'll take them and actually submit these. But if I were to think of the top studies that I would like to have commissioned having to do with this sport by like an MIT or Duke or some kind of institution like that, I would like a study commissioned on the most effective way to take penalties, because, you know, my thoughts on the Panenka, and I think you just – I don't even like the stuttered run-up. I think you should just smash the hell out of the ball. And the other study, JJ, that I would like to have commissioned, I need to know – once and for all, because I genuinely don't know. I'm torn. Does playing out from the back lead to more scoring chances for the attacking team than it creates for the defending team?
The stats generally on it are positive. Like, again, are positive, and it's a good thing to do. Now,
the study needs to be weighted, though. You have to wait, because if you play out from the back, you still got like 70 yards to go, whereas if you give the ball away, you're immediately in danger. And sure enough, I mean, you saw today, I don't know what Brighton were doing there, dancing around in their own box like that and just hand the ball to Phil Foden.
Well, look, that's De Zerbi has certain patterns and modes of play about triggering the press, inviting people on, and then knocking the ball in behind or going diagonal or whatever. So, yes, it works. But again, Andrew, hang on. Like, it depends who you're doing it against.
Time and place.
It depends who is doing it. Barney Roney made a great point exactly on this. He tweeted, "How can teams like Brighton realistically hope to beat or disrupt Manchester City when their entire game is basically a Guardiola tribute with less illustrious players?" One reason City are so utterly dominant domestically is every young coach is in awe of the real thing. Now, there are nuances and differences between what Pep does and what De Zerbi does, but the point isn't well made, particularly on that goal. Don't try and do to Man City what they basically wrote the patent on. And I mean, that third goal, if you are an Arsenal fan or a Liverpool fan and you're watching that, you're like, come on. I mean, there was a few things that happened that were kind of spectacularly funny. Like, City were going to win the game anyway. You could tell from the first few minutes. The De Bruyne header. That's a great diving header.
Is that a first for him? Has he had a diving header before?
I can't think of one. Not like that. I mean, it was, I won't say it was Van Persie-esque, but no. But it was, you know,
it was pretty cool. Those are nice goals. I enjoyed those.
Yeah, flew into the top corner from a Kyle Walker cross. And then the free kick, which probably wasn't a free kick, but whatever.
It's not a foul.
No.
It's not a foul.
No, but then it's deflected into the net. You're like, okay, fine. And then you're caught out, playing out from the back. You're like, fine, okay, what other indignity? What other indignity can be heaped upon us? And Ederson launches, like, in the second half. What was that? 60 yards? It had to be.
At least, right?
Right over the fullback into Kyle Walker, who eventually centers it in. Well, he doesn't center it. He collides with the goalkeeper to make sure the goalkeeper doesn't get it, and then Alvarez rolls it home. Yeah. Anybody who was, it's amazing. I was secretly hoping that De Zerbi could pull something, but the magic of the early part of the season is pretty much evaporated for Brighton now, and they are not, they were not going to be any competition for City, who were just miles better than them. So,
JJ, correct me if I'm wrong, but have you been embroiled in like a 3 week long Twitter argument over Brighton?
No. This is, so I thought they were class against Liverpool. Like, I really like. Maybe I should reevaluate that in terms of the way Liverpool played. Considering that my friend was at the game and said we actually didn't play well. No, I just said they were class, and some guy on Twitter was like, if by class you mean, and then all right, okay, and I said no, I thought they were really good, and I did think they were really good. I thought the goal they scored was excellent. I thought they carried the threat. I thought they gave Bradley his toughest game. Blah blah blah. Anyway, but I wouldn't give up. Like, if I think they're class, just leave it. Like, you can say, well, they're not that class. They're not this class. Okay, fine. I thought they were very good in that game. Just leave me alone.
Wait a minute.
But I wouldn't. I suppose the fact I wouldn't allow sometimes I have a habit on Twitter of like where just someone comes in and I think, I like the way you're speaking to me, I don't like it. So I'll just respond, no. Or nah. It's just like,
dismissive. You're very, yeah, you're yeah, very yeah. dismissive.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Jesus, yeah.
Because Brighton have had a weird season. But I give them a little bit of leeway just because I think it's over the course of like 2 years or so, it's hard to continuously have your roster pillaged and continue to play at that same level.
Yeah.
There's going to have to be a little bit of a reset that goes on. If they keep the manager, I think that they can bounce back next season. But I'm not. I can't say
sounds
I'm
like
stunned.
He's for the road. He realizes.
I think he's pushing for an exit.
Yeah, and I think he realizes maybe there's only so far you can take. Like, they've had to be brilliant, brilliant strategists and economists, and realize, well, if we sell this guy, we'll get that X and Y. But yeah, no, I do think they're class. Like, especially in the early part of the season, I really enjoyed watching them. Again, is their model of play sustainable? Mm-hmm. At this stage in the season against Manchester City pushing for a title? No, it isn't. And that's all she wrote about that one, Andrew. And again, this is the kind of game where you're watching and you're thinking this title race is done.
Well, we'll see. We'll see. There's another team out
people
there.
People will still listen to us if there's no title race. But relax.
Are you going to sit here right now and tell Arsenal fans that there's not a title race? Are you out of your mind? Come on.
What do you mean?
This title race is done?
Can Arsenal, I think City are walking it, yeah.
Well, let's talk about it because, I mean, Arsenal...
That's not Arsenal's fault.
Well, they won 5-0 midweek against Chelsea.
They did, yes.
And I would say, once again, for this club who has had their goal scoring questioned at times, they have sure shown an ability to score goals. This was a massacre. It could have been, I mean, honestly, it could have been much worse. I don't know. I'm not just saying this because he scored two goals, and one of them, by the way, was a mistake, a complete mistake. But England need to see what they can do about getting back into Ben White's good graces. I really think that highly of the season that he's had. Maybe Bukayo Saka can be some kind of intermediary. I just think, you know, I'm talking about Trent Alexander-Arnold before and some of his shortcomings. With Ben White, I don't see them right now. And now, if he was with England, does he supplant Kyle Walker or Kieran Trippier?
Probably not.
I don't know. Southgate has his guys, so I'm not sure. Walker, maybe a little more so, because Trippier's form has kind of really fluctuated and he's been hurt this year. But like on form of this season, Ben White will probably be in my Premier League team of the season right now at right back. But I want to read you something.
But he can't. But he is. You're right. You know what? One reason to try and get in his good graces and get him back. He is versatile. You know, like it's center back. He could play in a back three if Southgate so wished to go to a back three again. Yeah, he is versatile that way.
But I want to read you something though, because we've sort of been led to believe that Ben White's absence from England has been because there was some words were said to him in front of other players that kind of questioned his professionalism by an England assistant coach. So this is
the assistant coach.
So this is from Ben White's agent, Alex Levack. He posted this message on LinkedIn on Wednesday, after Ben White's 2-goal performance, about Ben White's decision to remain out of the England squad. And his agent said, "Whilst I appreciate that Ben is in the public eye, which brings its own connotations and leaves you open to criticism, I wanted to make the point that every elite performer, whichever field that may be, is a human being who has the same feeling we all have and experience good and bad. No one knows what is actually going on in one's life, so I really believe people should think before making a judgment or criticizing these elite performers in public. Ben has shown unbelievable robustness and strength throughout this adverse period off the pitch and has blocked out all the noise and has performed incredibly well on the pitch in a situation where many others could have and would have wilted. Ben has an incredible temperament and attitude, which allows him the ability to navigate through his working and personal life. I suppose the main message is be kind to people as you do not have the full facts, which in Ben's case, neither Ben nor I wish to vocalize publicly and do not know what is going on in people's personal lives. So again, please be kind." My takeaway, JJ.
Why say this, though?
And are we sure this is just about a comment made to Ben White by an England assistant coach?
Seems like it's more than that. And
right?
By the way, it was supposed to be Steve Holland that said something to him that upset him.
Yeah.
About him not watching football or not caring to watch football, not caring enough about the game, Andrew. That feels, seems like there's that statement feels like there's a lot more going on.
Feels like there's something deeper.
But why open it up to speculation now?
Don't know.
Did
and
it
if
need
I were...
to be said? Do you need to tell people to be kind? Do you expect them to listen? I'm be kind about what?
Are people being
unkind
right now? Like, I think he's kind of, I mean, I just said he's in my team of the season and I'm a Tottenham fan. Like, I don't know. Maybe England fans, as they're watching him play better and better week in, week out, maybe they're getting angrier and angrier and he's seeing stuff on social media. You know, I don't know, but
have there been boisterous members of the media who have like, so it's definitely a thing. In England, if you refuse to play, if you're of playing age, of fighting age, and you're like doing well and you're at a big club and you refuse to play for England, there are people who like to make big, big patriotic statements about this kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I remember, have you ever heard the audio from TalkSport where Carragher has just basically said, "I'm retiring from international football," because there were so many people ahead of him in the fullback position or the centre back position that he was like, "There's no point." So he retired. And one of the TalkSport people went after him, like said he was, you know, said it was kind of a disgrace. If you can represent your country, why wouldn't you? I won't say called him a coward, but was in and around that. And Carragher called the phone-in show.
Oh, good for him.
Yeah. And invited him down to Anfield to discuss it. So,
did that happen?
No, he didn't. Oh. They had a long and robust conversation on the basically on the on the whole point of why he wouldn't want to play for his country. You know, it is there. So maybe the kindness is in reference to abuse he's got or whatever. I don't know, but it feels like you're opening up a Pandora's box there, or not opening a Pandora's box. What's a box that is slightly ajar? Yeah, and that people are going to want to get inside and have a look more. Wow, that's a terrible metaphor. I don't know where I'm going with this, but the point being, you're opening it up to speculation now. I don't understand.
Yeah, he's been spectacular. I mean, he's having an unbelievable season. With regards to Arsenal as a whole,
it was so easy for them.
Oh my goodness!
By the way, how good was Odegaard?
Oh, one of the assists of the season on his ball to Havertz. It's like the ball had eyes on it.
Jesus,
just an incredible pass. He's had a great season. Kai Havertz, his season continues.
Finished well,
continues to impress. With regards to Arsenal's goal scoring, JJ, they've now won 6 games this season by 5 goals or more. They're the only club in the Premier League with more than 80 goals scored this season. In league play, Arsenal are averaging 2.4 goals per game. You say, oh, that sounds pretty good. How does that compare? Well, Real Madrid, their high-flying attack, Vinicius, Rodrigo, Bellingham, they're averaging 2.2 goals per game. So when you hear all this, what is your gut emotion here? Do you think, I guess their attack is pretty good after all? Or do you think, oh my God, imagine how good they could be with a bona fide elite striker?
Kind of after or during the Chelsea game, your thought is, wow, look at goals, brilliant, cutting the team open, albeit with the caveat that Chelsea are bad. I suppose it's the Aston Villa game that you think of where you're like, somebody to be the focal point of that attack to get on things. And it may be the case City, as I expect, will win the league. Maybe Arsenal do say, like, okay, let's try and get someone in. I don't know who that someone might be, but maybe they do think that. But, like, maybe conversely, they look at how they're doing, they think we're just doing fine. We're doing fine. Let's not upset the apple cart here. The only thing is, like...
Well, they are going to have to, I mean...
The only thing is,
you can't stand still in this league.
No, and you can't, like, what was the tweet I saw after when they were playing Bayern Munich? Like Bayern Munich, the second leg of the Bayern Munich game and the Aston Villa game, they do stand out as moments where you're like, we need someone other than Eddie Nketiah to try and change the course of this game. I don't think that's an unreasonable feeling. And you're right. If you don't upgrade, you know, I would like to meet the Arsenal fan that would say, well, I wouldn't like to get another attacker in or another goal scorer in. I think they genuinely would. But look at the stats, look at the numbers. They make a fool of people like me who said, I don't know if this attack is good enough to win a Premier League.
They continue to score and score and score. Meanwhile, on the Chelsea side, you look at this and you know, Chelsea, Arsenal, you want to say, oh, that's a bit worrying, but I'm going to be honest. I'm not really reading too deeply into what's happening at Chelsea right now. Like at this point of the season, are we learning anything new here? Like I can understand why Poch would be, why he would be disheartened by this, because he wants to see fight and there was no fight there. But look, they're coming off a deflating, spirit breaking FA Cup semifinal loss. That pretty much marked the end of their 2023-24 campaign. They were without Cole Palmer, so many of their other injuries, Reece James, Cole Will, Fofana, guys who've been out all season pretty much. Nicholas Jackson, he's just not good enough. Like you talk about a team in need of a striker, he ain't it.
But that moment where he was running in on the right-hand side, and I know it's at a bit of an angle, but he's basically bearing down on David Rea, and he just smashes it into the side net. You're like,
they gave 20-year-old Alfie Gilchrist his first start. Like, this definitely felt like a moment where the right team could absolutely pummel them, and Arsenal are very much the right team.
I think it's amazing with the impact that Cole Palmer's had on the team. Like they're Cole Palmer FC. Like he's come in and he's just been so important to them, and being their creative spark, being their goal scoring spark, being everything for them. And another one that I got really badly wrong, I was like, paying 60 million, and you know, the nonsense of me saying, well, you know, City knows something about him if they're willing to let him go. No. Unbelievable.
Yeah. I mean, look, there was a little bit of a track record of reckless spending from Chelsea, so it's hard to trust some of their moves. But this
True.
One, they've thrown a lot of S at the wall, and this one stuck. I mean, he's unbelievable. And yeah, his absence means a lot right now.
Oh, it does. It means they're pretty much ineffective.
Yeah, it's like they can't win, really, if he's not playing. So the title challenge, you proclaimed it over for Liverpool, but you've even now taken it a step further. And despite the fact that Arsenal are atop the table, you've proclaimed it over, period. As
Andrew,
the current second place side, you have...
I want you to go to the standings, Andrew. Okay,
I'm looking at them.
You're looking at the standings. How many games have Manchester City played?
One fewer than Arsenal.
Right. What happens, say Man City were to play another game tomorrow, mm-hmm. what happens were they to win that game tomorrow, Andrew?
I understand math, all right? Oh, you smug.
I just think City are going to win the league. Why do you have to make this about anything other than that?
I think that too. But you said there's no title race.
It's not a race anymore. This is the
They're not even in first. There is at least a race. There's not a race in Italy. All right.
This is us reheating an argument before. I don't think City are going to lose to the end of the season. I'm not saying Arsenal are going to slip up. I'm saying Arsenal could win all their games. If both teams win all their games, who wins the title, Andrew?
But that doesn't mean that we're not in a race.
Okay. All right. We're still in a race, and I think City are going to win the race. I'm predicting
there you
the
go.
Race.
That's how you do it.
Okay.
Thank you. Let's see. Let's go ahead. We'll take a break. Actually, I don't want to take a break just yet because there is something important I want to remind everybody of as we're getting near the end here of the month of April. And as always, this episode is brought to you by Manscaped. And as you know by now, April, JJ, is National Testicular Cancer Awareness Month. And our friends over at Manscaped have partnered with the Testicular Cancer Society to help spread awareness for men's health and early cancer detection. So visit manscaped.com/TCS to learn how to check yourself for early signs of cancer. And as always, you can use promo code CAUGHTOFFSIDE for 20% off and free shipping at manscaped.com. It's the perfect partnership as Manscaped gets together with National Testicular Cancer Awareness Month because they just, I mean, no pun intended, they go hand in hand. You do your monthly shave in the shower, super easy, clean up, waterproof razor, shave head, all that stuff. And when you finish, you admire your work and you check yourself.
How's your balls, Andrew?
I mean, right now, how are they? I've got two of them and they're fine.
Yeah.
But I probably am. I am due for a trim. There's no question about that.
I'm due for a trim as well. And thankfully I've got such armor from the Manscaped family of products. I've got so many options to just get the garden in order.
Yeah. That's important. It's very important. So, of course, in addition to providing the right tools and solutions for comfortable and easy grooming, Manscaped is committed to raising awareness and giving support for fighters, survivors, and families impacted by testicular cancer. That's why they're going to be donating $50,000 to the Testicular Cancer Society. Very nice. So help save lives by going over to manscaped.com/TCS and sharing their funny educational check yourself video. And while you're at it, grab 20% off and free shipping with code CAUGHTOFFSIDE. JJ, we'll go ahead. We'll take a break. There's still some big stories on the other side that we got to talk about. Arne Slot, Xavi, Tim Weah, a lot of things still to do here on Caught Offside. Don't go anywhere.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems. But getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Oh, back now. Caught offside late on a Thursday evening. JJ, before we get to the slot and Xavi and all that, I saw this from Michael Anthony, good fan of the program. He reached out to us on Twitter, and he posted a quote from Javier Tebas, the head of La Liga, and he said this. Tebas says in the quote, "First for Real Madrid, and I say it as a Madrid fan, it's a great joy." Talking about Mbappe going there. Mbappe is one of the best players in the world. I could no longer say that he's the best because I think Bellingham is the best and Vinicius too, but he's one of the best players in the world. And so Michael Anthony took that quote and then tweeted at us and said, at CO Soccer Pod, does this make the list for if this happened in the U.S., it would be the biggest story in all of sports? The commissioner of a major sports league openly admits he is a fan of one team club and not for the first time either.
Yeah.
It's weird. I'm not saying it's scandalous or anything like that, but you would not see this. I don't know who Roger Goodell was a fan of, but by the way, like, this extends even further. Like, why did Nottingham Forest even know that the VAR was a Luton fan?
They have that recorded. There's a list. They have to.
That's wild. I don't know who Ed Hockley was a fan of when he was a kid. Like, why do people? It's crazy to me that like fandom is so of like officials is so known and they're open about it.
I mean, they have to give that information to the FA. I think it's a standard. Like, so there'll be certain referees who won't be involved with games in a region they either grew up in or support a team in that region. So
that's amazing.
It's the way it is. And I think was it the Sunday Times or the Mirror or some newspaper in England last week. After the Stuart Atwell controversy, or rather the Nottingham Forest tweet controversy, they published all the referees' names in the Premier League and who they support.
Incredible.
Yeah.
I mean, this is not a thing that you hear, but like, I don't know.
I don't think.
Has Adam Silver ever talked about who as a kid? I don't know.
Yeah, probably not. I don't know. I always feel like with commissioners in American sports that they're like, They're corporate men first.
Yeah, they're bots.
Yeah, their commitment is and they come from like non-sporting backgrounds often. You know, they're not necessarily, you know, it's not an ex-player or someone like that that gets the job. It's a corporate guy. So I always see them as like maybe slightly less than. Yeah, I don't know. Whereas like referees could come up in football, you know, they're surrounded by it. So they're bound to have some team that they support.
But I'm sure like referees, NBA refs played basketball.
Yeah.
They, you know, like, I don't know. I'm sure if you went back and found some like interviews of Rob Manfred, he probably said, oh, when I was sitting in the old Yankee Stadium bleachers, you know, cheering for Reggie. And yeah, so I'm guessing that you could go back and find it. But it is interesting, Javier, like, first for Real Madrid, and I say it as a Madrid fan. It's a great joy that Mbappe. It is weird. It's weird.
Yeah,
it's a little strange.
especially in a, you know, just a league that's been, you know, we had the whole Barcelona ref fixing scandals, you know, or reports. I don't know if they ever got to a scandal. Nothing was ever done, but
like I sometimes worry that we made a mistake letting people know who we root for. But if commissioners and referees are telling everybody, then what's the problem if we do?
So I went back and forth on that. Like I there was a time when I was like so sick of being told everything I said was biased. Like even if it was my genuine opinion, you know, it's just you're biased because, you know, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. You're a Liverpool supporter. And I thought, all right, I'm sorry we ever volunteered that information. And then in other ways, I think people will just accuse you of bias anyway. You know, like Miguel Delaney gets called a United fan all the time because a lot of the articles he talk about is about City's ownership, and you know, Manchester City fans don't want to talk about that. So you're going to get the accusation one way or the other. One other thing, I need to know about your relationship or your connection with a member of government.
My guy Pete?
Pete, Mayor Pete Buttigieg.
It's like he's clearly a listener. And he was, he was moved by what happened to me and my family when our 5:50 a.m. flight was changed and nearly destroyed our first day of vacation, if not for the quick actions of my wife. Yeah, he...
Someone was called
not more than like 2 days later. He is made
Pete
an
is Pete an animal?
We got to find his Reddit username.
I know there's a fairly senior director at Apple listens.
Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah. I know there's a few. I don't know if they're famous. Would you call them famous? But people who have influence and control.
We should say, by the way, what you're referring to, in case people weren't aware. On the last podcast, I did it. I was in Florida on a family vacation, and the first day of my trip nearly got knocked to hell because my flight was canceled and not notice wasn't really given, and like they had to rebook me on a flight that wouldn't have gotten us into Florida until like 9 o'clock that night, which is like we were supposed to be in at 11 in the morning. And I was like, this is not acceptable. Like, we don't have, like I said, we're not rolling
and
in money.
Call Mayor
like,
Pete.
No, I said, like, this is not okay to do to people who, like, save up money for a while to, like, go on vacation. It's not, traveling is the worst. Like, I love being in new places. That's the best. But it's just unfortunate the hell that you have to go through to do it. Like, even on the way back, I won't say the airline names, but, like, we took one airline on the way there and a different airline on the way home. The way there, the airline canceled our flight, nearly blew out our entire first day of the trip. On the way home, we take a flight, and it's like, you want to talk about being nickel and dimed. Yeah. I mean, the money you got to pay for effing carry-on. Like, what?
Yeah.
I couldn't believe it. And so, it just like, I don't know. It's just the whole travel experience. It's just like they make you not want to travel. But then you get to these cool places, and you're like, this is why I do it, because I love new food and new sights, and like it's awesome, new experiences. But man, the process is just, it's enough to make you say, I'll effing drive. I'll just effing drive. Like, but anyway, thank you, Mayor Pete, because he's the Secretary of Transportation.
Yeah.
And he announced that airlines will now have to refund you for canceling flights. They'll have to give you your money back. As it is now, what do you get? You just get like a credit that like oftentimes expires if it's not used. Or
no, it's going to be cold hard currency. I look forward to seeing how corporate America gets around this one.
Oh, watch these prices for flights start to skyrocket. Like, I'm sure we'll get screwed in some other way, but his heart was in the right place, and I'm glad that he did it. So well done, Pete Buttigieg, and my family and I thank you. Let's see, JJ, some managerial news. I had suggested, I've kind of been saying it for several weeks, that just like, I don't know, it just felt like there were too many important people within Barcelona, like within the structure of that club, that wanted Xavi to return. And they're openly talking about kind of like courting him to change his mind. Laporta, Deco, like they're openly discussing it. Like, it just felt like this was all moving in a certain direction. Yeah. And, you know, part of the reason that I thought that is I can't help but feel, I'm not saying he was being irrational or anything, but I just can't help but feel that when Xavi made his decision in the first place that he was going to end it at the end of the season, he did that during a period of high emotional stress.
Yeah.
Let's look back at what was going on in the lead up to that announcement. They took a mid-season trip across the Atlantic Ocean to Dallas to lose to Liga MX's Club America in a late December friendly. They then come back to Spain and resume La Liga play. They barely beat Copa del Rey play. They barely beat a fourth tier side in the Copa del Rey. Then they fly off to Saudi Arabia, where they get pummeled by Real Madrid in the Spanish Supercopa final. Then they get eliminated from the Copa del Rey in extra time by Athletic Bilbao. And then a further dent is put into their league title defense when they lose to Villarreal 5-3, conceding three goals from the 84th minute onward. And it was after that game, remember, he didn't speak to the press. It was like an hour had gone by, and people were tweeting from the press conference room being like, Xavi's still not in here. Something's up. And then he comes out and he says, I'm leaving. I'm done. I can't do this anymore. His quote, the job wears you down terribly in terms of health, of mental health, your mood, your emotional state. I'm a positive guy, but the energy goes down, down, down until the point at which you say it makes no sense. I think he made an emotional decision. And I think those are decisions that you can talk someone into reversing course on when the dust of the decision settles. And the dust has settled. It's been months now. People want him back. I think the fans maybe were a little bit taken aback by Xavi's style of play at first. Even though they won a league title, I think it didn't look like Barcelona. So there was a little bit of like re-getting to know you period that Xavi was maybe a little surprised by some of the treatment. But like the fans clearly adore him still, even though, you know, Barcelona aren't going to win a trophy this season. I think that like, I just felt like it was all heading in this direction. There were too many forces at play that felt like this was going to be an inevitable end to this.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. Also, just from the perspective, and I know we're going to get to Arne Slot, but from the perspective of just like the landscape of available managers to step into not Norwich, but Barcelona and Liverpool. Andrew, let me tell you, there's not a ton out there. Like,
and further complicating that, I wanted to ask you this question. Barcelona, one of the biggest clubs in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Is that job appealing?
Well, not the way Xavi talked about it.
No, he was not doing good PR for whoever the prospective candidates were.
No. I mean, it's appealing in the sense of the status of the club and the size of the club. You're Barcelona manager. It's less appealing when you look at it in terms of like the overall state of the club. And what a Barcelona manager might potentially have to oversee in front of those fans. And we talk about the selling of some of their greatest young properties.
Right. If they don't have money to buy, like Real Madrid are buying Kylian Mbappe and Endrick. Meanwhile, you know, Barcelona aren't able to do that. Like, no offense to him, Rafinha's a good player, but like they're looking at Leeds, you know, like that's where they're, you know, and they got Lewandowski, but he's nearing the end of whatever his prime is. He probably has already come out of it. Like the appealing part of Barcelona is this bevy of incredible talented youth that they have. But if PSG come in for some 200 million euro bid for Lamine Yamal and Barcelona are in this kind of financial state, there's no guarantee that Barcelona are going to tell PSG to F off. They might entertain that.
No.
And like, so the most appealing part of Barcelona right now, you question, well, I don't actually know how appealing it really is.
That's the point. And again, like, you know, Xavi staying is kind of some sort of stability. There was plenty of Barcelona fans in our mentions who were like, you know, when he announced, particularly when they got knocked out of the Champions League, I think they felt, you know, it's time to move on. I wonder how this sits with them, realizing he's going to be staying.
I have one of them here. I was going to read it.
Go ahead.
I got this message on Twitter from Bacho Geneza. He said, honestly, it feels like a desperation. As a Barca fan, don't even know how to feel about this. Club is struggling to find the proper replacements and is going back to its loyal son, betting on his devotion to guide them out of the slump. Based on lack of options, it makes sense. It doesn't seem like he's high-fiving all his buddies about this, but I mean, look, I don't see it as a bad thing that Xavi. I mean, I do believe in stability. I think these young players have emerged under it's this just manager. I think the players wanted him to come back. I was reading, was it Sid Lowe, I think, was referencing certain players who were kind of asking him to rethink.
I think you and I both know that the pressures and the stresses that precipitated the statement that he made and the actions he took will be there again.
Yeah.
You know, and that's how he negotiates and navigates that is the question. But you called it, Andrew. You called it.
He said in his statement about returning, it's a, in terms of the reason, it's a cocktail of things that have led me to take this decision. It wasn't quite of money or ego. The fans played an important role. A good part of this decision is because of them. This project is not finished, and they have shown me a lot of affection. The complicity and support of the players has been very important. I think he's a guy who wants. He wants to be liked. Yeah. I think he might need some of that. And he's the main guy now. Like when he was a player there, don't get me wrong, he was one of the best players in the world, but you know, there were other great players there that maybe like also took slings and arrows when it wasn't all on Xavi. But now he is that guy now. He's the face of the club right now. And you know, that maybe that's a role that he's took him a little longer than maybe he thought, especially after winning a title in his first season, to kind of get used to. So he returns. In terms of Liverpool, as far as we know, their manager Jurgen Klopp is not returning, and a new favorite has emerged: Arne Slot of Feyenoord.
Yes. I suppose maybe like a week ago we weren't talking about Arne Slot, but the last few days it's ramped up. Slot himself has said there's negotiations. Melissa Reddy of Sky is saying that this could move quickly as Slot is eager to be the manager. They're trying to, according to her, they're trying to negotiate his severance fee, which would Liverpool would pay Feyenoord, and it's in the region of 7.5. Feyenoord are trying to get it up closer to 10. Didn't see this name really coming, but maybe I should have, considering once Xabi Alonso was gone, it then focus switched to Amorim, and that clearly wasn't something that he wanted to do or take at time, or maybe there was conflicting reports. There was reports that Amorim didn't want to be manager of Liverpool, or not at this moment, and that Liverpool had cooled on him, such as the phrases we use around these appointments. And now it looks as if Arne Slot is more than the leader in the clubhouse, Andrew, likely to get the job, according to a lot of journalists.
Yeah, I mean, look, he was a candidate last year for, what was it? Was it Tottenham?
Yeah.
But I don't think it was either he didn't really want it that badly, or there was a negotiation between the clubs that they couldn't find common ground. So this is not, we're not just being introduced to him now. I mean, his name has come up previously. He's had a lot of success there. And it seems like, you know, from a systems perspective, I think it will be a lot more front foot football, counter pressing, some of the things that I think will be comfortable for Liverpool players and fans going from one manager to the next. And by the way, you know, PSV have had this incredibly successful season, and it looks like they're going to waltz to a title. Mm. But like, Feyenoord have actually been excellent. And you know, I saw Opta on their expected points model. They actually, I think Feyenoord is just barely ahead of PSV. Like, Feyenoord have continued to play pretty much at the same rate that they had been in their title-winning seasons, but PSV have just been extraordinary this season.
And it's Feyenoord have drawn 6 games, which has really hurt them. Yeah. And they've only lost 2. Look, it's impossible to gauge. If you're telling me there's a bald Dutch manager coming your way, I wouldn't be necessarily over the moon about it. But it's amazing that the kind of the switch between the way fans are now analyzing Slot and talking themselves into it, because they know what's happening and why he's the perfect replacement.
Let me read you this.
What's interesting for me about Arne Slot is that he's not, when Klopp was talking to, when he did that video about announcing he was leaving at the end of the season, he talked about how much he did and how much of a role he had in the club. He didn't. He more or less said he did everything, or was involved in everything, and it was too much, or it was a lot. Michael Edwards is back in now as the kingmaker at Liverpool, and he's their director of football, but he's so much more than that. He's now a part of FSG. Michael Edwards is not appointing another Klopp. He's not going to appoint a guy who will have that much control over the club. And in that sense, Slot might make a lot of sense to the Liverpool hierarchy.
Sure. I saw this too from Opta. They write this about Slot: the most eye-catching data is Feyenoord's pressing under Slot. Last season, only Benfica at 8.4 won possession more times in the final third per game than Feyenoord, 7.8, of all teams in Europe's top 10 leagues, with Liverpool doing so 5.7 times per game. Manchester City topped that metric this season, ahead of Benfica and Feyenoord, with Liverpool on 6.0 per game. Feyenoord this season are at 6.9. So I think that's, you know, that's a quality that you know, Liverpool, they look for players who can do that. So Slot can continue with this team, I would say. I think it could work. I mean, look, it's hard to know how things will translate from the Dutch league into the Premier League. I'm not sure.
And how will he address also the issues we've just spoken about, the things that need to be corrected, the signings that need to be made? It's impossible to tell. It's impossible.
Of course.
But it doesn't make it bad. No, with Edwards, we know it's going to be a data-driven signing. It's going to be something that, but the thing to remember is you're not getting Klopp 2.0. This guy will not have the same personality. He will not have the same connection with the city. He will not disturb and disrupt the club in the same way that Klopp did. That's not coming back, guys.
Yeah, I mean, you're probably right about that. Doesn't mean he can't be really successful. And I know, if Ten Hag has kind of steered us into thinking that all bald Dutchmen have a certain personality, I think Slot you'll find to be much different. Again, this is from Opta. Those familiar with the 45-year-old Dutch coach speak of his excellent communication with a warmth and humor that resonates with fans and players alike. That's good.
Yeah. It's like, you can't catch me 24 hours since I've seen Klopp at his lowest ebb and the club have lost the derby and me, hey, get excited. It's the Arne Slot show. Just, you got to give me time to process.
So we can't, I will we have can't a full, discuss these things.
I'll have a full Slot report. There'll be a Slot report before the end of the season. My full thoughts, analysis, feelings. Don't worry. I'm not there yet, though.
I am worried. Let's see, a few American things before we close out here on today's show. The Columbus Crew, JJ, they're going to take a one-goal lead with them to Monterrey for the second leg of their CONCACAF Champions Cup semifinal. 2-1 in the first leg. What a fascinating start to the season for Columbus. They've knocked out a fellow MLS side from this cup. They knocked out one of Liga MX's top sides in Tigres. Now they've got a lead against one of Liga MX's other top sides in Monterrey. They've only been beaten once so far in MLS through 9 matches, and they've done this while navigating a suspension to arguably their best player in Cucho, who scored in this game. Just amazing start to the season for them.
No, I think it's going to be really tough in Mexico in the second leg. Like, super
tough.
Yeah,
I would agree with that.
But by the same token, great result. Hercules Gomez tweeted something which is kind of apropos of what we were discussing about Brighton. It's Columbus, a passage of play, Columbus playing out from the back through the Monterrey press, and it's pretty good to watch. It's very, very good stuff. Herc tweets, you have to applaud the audacity of Nancy of Wilfred Nancy's Crew. It won't be easy, but eliminating new powers, Tigres and Rayados, en route to a CONCACAF Champions Cup final would be epic. The final wouldn't be easier. Pick your poison, America or Pachuca. But his point is, you should watch the video that he's posted. It's pretty nice stuff. And there's a chance for them to be like a really, really immortal MLS side if they can negotiate the next leg.
Sure. They're not through yet. That's a good point. The toughest part is still to come. But yeah, the fact that not that an MLS Cup needed any validation, that stands on its own, but to follow it up with this so early in the ensuing season, I mean, yeah, he's that manager. There's a reason right now he's thought of as the best manager in this league, and he's got his team playing at an extremely high level. So we'll see if they're able to see it through. Also pertaining to America, JJ, Juventus, one of America's teams in Europe, they're through to the Coppa Italia final, thanks in large part to a massive assist from a guy who really needed it, Tim Weah, late in the semifinal against Lazio, came on, played a great ball across the face of goal.
He drilled it, Andrew. He really did. A volleyed drill. Some people in the past would call it a cross-cum shot, but I think he genuinely meant to just put it into the corridor of uncertainty between the goalkeeper and the defenders. It's worth noting though that like it was looking really bad for Juventus. Tati Castellanos with a header for the opener, a header no less. He got up there and headed it into the top corner. Missed a big opportunity to make it 2-0 before halftime. Then did make it 2-0 with a super strike. Gets taken off as a sub, I think, around the 80th minute. And then the sub that really made a difference was Juventus bringing in Ardus Milik, who applied the finish to Weah's great cross.
Yeah, Juventus and AC Milan are going to meet this weekend as well. Lots of yeah. hot American action going on there.
All right, calm down.
By the way, it should be noted too, we talked about this on the last pod, but it is official. Sergiño Dest is going to miss the summer's Copa America.
See, all the PSV players wore his number.
Yeah,
out in the recent game. So obviously realizing the seriousness of the injury.
Yeah, and I think it's going to go beyond that as well. I think there was a report I saw that he will not play again this calendar year. It's
brutal.
Incredibly unfortunate.
And then he's in a race against time to come back in 2025, get fit, get back into the team. How will this... Will this jeopardize now his... He's not fully transferred from Barcelona.
No, he's alone.
So, like, hopefully PSV stand by him. And they... Well, stand by, what does that mean? They have no... The obligation is with their...
If he's going to miss... If he's going to miss the half of next season, yeah, I don't know. I mean, it certainly... Look, he's going to play again. But in terms of which club he's, PSV, he's clearly well suited there to play for that club. He's done, he's thrived there this season, been one of their standout players. So you'd like to see that continue, but this, and this throws a lot of uncertainty into that. Should mention, by the way, also PSV, they won 8-0 and Malik Tillman in the first 14 minutes had an assist and two goals earlier today. So going well for him as he looks to secure a spot on the Copa America roster for this summer. And so now with Dest out, I mean, I feel bad talking about this, but we are a soccer podcast. We've got to discuss these things. The question of, so what do they do now? What is the U.S., what is their plan of action with
well,
one of their...
you've got an idea.
So one name that I've seen starting to emerge more and more is... we've talked about Joe Scally, George Bello, Reggie Cannon, I don't know. But the name that we were just discussing, a player who we're not used to seeing in the Stars and Stripes at that part of the field, Tim Weah. So this year, Weah's appearances are generally for Juve, they've been a little further up the field. And obviously for the U.S., they're always further up the field. He's pretty much had a lock on that right wing spot under Berhalter. But according to Transfermarkt, last year at Lille, Tim Weah played fullback 16 times. He's not unfamiliar with that position. He played both left back and right back at Lille on a number of occasions. And by the way, if he can do that, you now also do kind of solve a second problem of, well, how are we going to fit all these attacking players? Who's the odd man out? Well, I mean, now you've kind of opened up a space potentially for Gio Reyna to slide in. So if Weah is willing to do it, because he has played well for the U.S. at that right wing position up front. So I don't know. You may not want to, maybe you think, are we jeopardizing two positions rather than one by moving this guy around from a position where he's a strength for us? But if it can work, it could work spectacularly if Weah can do the job.
Yeah.
Just a thought.
I wonder, will Greg want to go that way, or will he want to keep Weah as part of the attacking unit and then try and figure it out? I kind of feel like he might err on the side of caution with that one, Andrew. I don't know.
If I were guessing, I would say Joe Scally will be your starting right back for the first game of Copa America. Yeah. But the U.S. have two friendlies leading up to that, Brazil and Colombia. Maybe there's a chance that you see them test it out, just to see, okay, is this something, if this happened previously, maybe they had a little more of a run up to give it a shot. There's a time crunch here where that might be too big of a change to make. I don't know, but just a thought, because I think you got to kind of put all options on the table right now when you lose a player of such significance as Dest is. So we hope he has a speedy recovery. And we'd love to see him back for PSV, Barcelona, the U.S., whoever it is. Love to see him back soon because he's a really fun player. We really enjoy that guy. I don't have much else, JJ. I don't have much else.
That's pretty much me done.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, well. You are done. You're done.
I mean, yesterday I texted you. I said this was my Croatia Zagreb moment. Or Dino.
Is that what you view for me as like the definitive I'm broken moment?
I remember
more, more than Newcastle last year.
Who?
I mean last Newcastle, year there were several, but
I mean Newcastle prompted you to do your own podcast, to go rogue, to commandeer Caught Offside Towers. But I remember texting you when Tottenham lost to the, was it the Olić hat trick in Zagreb, and you
I couldn't
you
believe
told,
what
you told me that you were done. That was it. That
broke
was
it. Me. It totally broke me, because it broke me on multiple levels. Because you know I was a Mourinho holdout. I was with him, and then that was the one where it broke me on Tottenham season. It broke me on my support of Mourinho. It hurt that one. Yeah. I should say though, you know how I'd said the other day, Ibarra Eze of Crystal Palace. That guy can play for my team anytime. I love that guy.
Yes.
Well. I mean, look, transfer rumors, it's all silly season, but if rumors are to be believed, Tottenham are interested. He's been linked to Spurs. I'm reading here from Hotspur HQ. The rumor was reported by Football Transfers ahead of the North London Derby on Sunday, April 28th. According to Steve Kay, sources have reported that Eze and his family were invited to watch the match alongside the Spurs recruitment team this weekend. The 25-year-old is a London native coming through the ranks at Arsenal, Fulham, Reading, Millwall, and QPR before signing for Palace in 2020 for $7.7 million. My hopes are going to get up quickly. I love that guy. He's one of my favorite players in the league.
We can play this game very easily. You know, you can just start a rumor, like top players like that. You know, I'm hearing Michael Olise is on his way to Liverpool.
Now, come on.
Et cetera.
But who are you, though?
Oh, I didn't read it on Tottenham Hotspur HQ. I read it on...
They're just an aggregator.
Anfield Agenda.
They're only aggregating.
Well, can we aggregate our way to the end
of
this podcast?
You can go weep. Go for one of your long walks, whatever you need to do to get yourself right.
I will say one of the funniest things was, you know, Stewie, when he goes to bed, turns over and starts weeping. I can't remember what episode of Family Guy that's from. Well, someone's mocked up a Liverpool bedroom. Stewie's in it. He turns off the light, rolls over and goes. And it did make me laugh.
Oh, well, that's good. I'm glad it helped. Hey, I enjoyed this immensely. Hope all of you out there did as well. JJ, to you, I say.
Check you later, fun boy.
See ya.
Take care.
You've been listening to the Caught Offside Soccer Podcast.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.